Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Mark, and thanks especially to AFMA as well for hosting this event and for so many of your members attending today. In 2020, the Reserve Bank adjusted its open market operations, or OMO, in response to changing conditions in money markets, including those that were brought about by the bank's own monetary policy actions. It's now time to make some further changes to OMO to ensure that the benefits of these operations are preserved as conditions evolve over time. And the purpose of my talk today is to outline our plans for OMO and the reasoning behind them. Let me start, though, with a bit of background. At the onset of the pandemic, extreme uncertainty and the prospect of a significant and widespread decline in economic activity led to dislocation in global financial markets and a surge in the demand for liquidity. If you wouldn't mind going to the next slide, please. The Reserve Bank met that demand with an expansion in our open market operations, increasing the size and lengthening the terms of the repurchase operations, as you can see here. The bank also moved away from auctions in which the repo rate was determined by the banks bidding for fixed quantities of liquidity. Instead, since April of 2020, the bank has been filling bids for liquidity that are at or above a predefined hurdle rate, which is currently the cash rate target. In this way, if you could move to the next chart. Thanks, May. In this way, the OMO repo rates are fixed and the amounts dealt at OMO have been determined by the demand for this source of liquidity. This approach has been effective at addressing some fairly pronounced shifts in demand. And you can see that in the next chart more clearly. There was a substantial initial surge in demand for liquidity from OMO, which saw the Reserve Bank's repo book in black here peak at around $100 billion back in June of 2020. The repo book then declined and is currently around $10 billion, which is below pre-pandemic levels. This decline in the demand for liquidity from open market operations makes sense. In particular, exchange settlement balances, they rose significantly, and you can see that in orange here, as a result of first the term funding facility, as well as bond buying, and later in 2020, the bond purchase program. This substantial rise in banking system liquidity means that banks have less need to obtain short-term funds, a much greater capacity and willingness to lend them. Given the reduced demand for liquidity from the Reserve Bank's open market operations, we've shortened our preferred terms for OMO to between 1 and 3 months, with the average term to maturity of new repos declining to around 7 weeks of late. We've also reduced the frequency of OMO from daily to weekly. The Reserve Bank's balance sheet is likely to remain large for some time yet because the funding provided under the term funding facility, that will not mature until June 2024 at the very latest. And the bank's holdings of government bonds will mature over many years. Accordingly, the supply of exchange settlement balances is likely to exceed demand for an extended period, and the demand from liquidity from OMO is therefore likely to remain low. Now, despite the reductions in the size, the maturity, and the frequency of OMO, they do remain an important part of the Reserve Bank's framework. OMO are an important source of short-term liquidity for individual financial institutions, which, as I'll describe in a minute, and for various reasons, they don't always have access to liquidity as readily as others. OMO also provides a backstop to the banking system as a whole, just in case there's a sudden and broad-based increase in the demand for liquidity. In other words, open market operations can quickly help to relieve pressures in short-term money markets in the event of unforeseen tightening in liquidity conditions. And reflecting those benefits, the Reserve Bank will continue to conduct open market operations. So having said all of that, we are looking, however, to adjust our operations in a number of ways. These changes are intended to ensure that open market operations continue to provide the benefits I've just described, including in the face of changes that are likely to affect money markets in the future. I'll first describe the planned changes and then I'll explain why we are pursuing these. If you could move to the next slide, please. Thank you. So first, the interest rate on OMO repos will change to a floating rate, which at this stage we plan to base on the average cash rate target prevailing over the term of the repo. Some other central banks already use floating rates in similar fashions in their liquidity operations, including the Bank of England and the European Central Bank. Before we adopt floating rate repos, though, the Reserve Bank is looking to hear from market participants on the extent of adjustments that may be required to their systems in order to accommodate floating rates. Hence, we're going to allow for an appropriate transition period before making this important change. So the second thing is that in the meantime, the bank will continue to apply a fixed hurdle rate for open market operations. However, this hurdle rate will change from the current cash rate target to the rate on term matched overnight index swaps, or OIS, plus a modest spread. And initially, this spread will be around 5 basis points, but subject to change depending on market conditions. And the bank will post the relevant hurdle rate for each preferred term with the announcements of our open market operation dealing intentions. And then the third thing in terms of changes are the following. The maximum tenor of open market operation repos will typically be 4 weeks, although longer terms may be offered if and when warranted by market conditions. Just in terms of the timing, the shortening of OMO tenors, that third thing, that will take effect immediately. So from tomorrow's open market operation. Working backwards, the second thing, setting the hurdle rate as a spread to OIS, will be effective from the 30th of March this year. The cash rate target in the meantime will remain at the OMO hurdle rate until that time. And as already mentioned on the first item, the timing of the change to floating repo rates will be announced after we have received some feedback on this aspect of the plan, and we'll be in touch with the relevant market participants in due course. So now I'm just going to spend a few minutes turning to the reasons for these changes. First, though, it's important that I emphasise that these are operational adjustments and they do not in any way provide guidance on the future path of monetary policy. Now that the bank has ceased purchases under the bond purchase program, the bank's balance sheet will, in time, gradually start to decline. In this environment, liquidity will remain ample for some time, and most market participants are expected to continue to find it easy to source liquidity from private markets rather than the Reserve Bank. However, as mentioned earlier, open market operations remains an important source of liquidity for some financial institutions. It also is a flexible way to quickly respond to liquidity pressures that might emerge from time to time across the banking system more broadly. It's important that the design of open market operations is appropriate to meet those objectives that I flagged, yet flexible enough to adapt to the liquidity environment as it evolves. A key consideration in our open market operation design is how to determine the hurdle rate. And as I've mentioned, this is quite different to what we were doing in the pre-pandemic period when the Reserve Bank targeted the quantity of liquidity to be provided through OMO, and then the repo rates were determined through a competitive auction process. But because the Reserve Bank no longer targets a set amount of system liquidity, there's no clear rationale for setting an OMO auction of a specific size. Instead, by setting the price of OMO liquidity and filling bids at this level, the auction size automatically adjusts to any changes in demand. Whether that demand's localized, maybe to a handful of banks and financial institutions, or is more widespread across the system. Given the high level of system liquidity at present, most market participants find it relatively easy to source short-term liquidity without needing to use OMO. In this environment, it makes sense for the hurdle rate for OMO to be set above prevailing market rates in order to encourage market participants to use their existing liquidity or to tap into private markets instead, as they might need to. But the hurdle rate should not be so high that it discourages the use of open market operations in the event of an unexpected broad-based increase in liquidity demand, when other sources of short-term liquidity may be very expensive or unavailable for a time. Furthermore, we continue to see regular open market operation participation from institutions that don't have large ES balances and they're less well connected to private markets, including because they might use collateral that is less widely accepted. Open market operations remain an important source of liquidity for those types of institutions in normal times, and the open market operation hurdle rate should not be set so high that this liquidity becomes unduly expensive. Looking ahead to the time when short-term money market rates eventually rise, it will no longer be appropriate to continue with a repo rate that's determined based on the cash rate target prevailing on the day of the open market operation. If the OMO repo rate were to be set below short-term money market rates of an equivalent term, then demand for liquidity at the bank's open market operations would rise noticeably, potentially leading to destabilizing moves in other markets. So the move to base OMO repo rates in the first instance on OIS plus a modest spread, and then in time to a floating rate based on the cash rate target, will avoid such situations. Turning to our OMO tenors briefly, in most circumstances, OMO repos of 4 weeks or less will provide sufficient liquidity to eligible counterparties if they need it. And since the bank will continue to fill OMO bids that meet the hurdle rate and will offer preferred terms with maturity dates that align to the subsequent OMO auctions, participants will be able to roll their outstanding repo positions with the Reserve Bank. Of course, institutions can source liquidity from private markets for longer terms than 4 weeks as they desire. So drawing this all together then, OMO remains an important part of the Reserve Bank's monetary policy toolkit. Over the past 2 years, it's complemented our other policy measures in providing accommodative financial conditions and supporting the economy. The operational changes I've outlined today do not provide any guidance on the future path of monetary policy. Rather, they will ensure that OMO remains fit for purpose as liquidity conditions, the economic outlook, and the bank's monetary policies evolve. The shortening in the maximum typical term for repos to 4 weeks, that's going to start, as I said, with tomorrow's open market operation. The use of term-matched OIS rates plus a modest spread for the repo hurdle rate, that will start from the 30th of March of this year. And then the timing of the switch to a floating repo rate will be determined after we receive feedback from market participants. So thank you very much for listening, and thanks, Mark. I'll turn to you and I look forward to questions.
Thank you, Chris. Just a reminder that if you'd like to ask Chris a question, please post all your questions via the chat function, which can be found in the bottom right-hand corner of your screen. The first question we have comes from Yishu Kumar at Barrenjoey Capital. He asks, if interest rates were to return to more normal levels, would the rate that the bank pays ADIs on excess balances in their exchange settlement accounts remain at 10 basis points below the cash rate target, or would it revert to the pre-pandemic 25 basis points? Does the excess reserve framework currently in place as a result of the TFF and the RBA quantitative easing program have implications for such decisions?
Thanks for that question. I think the starting point is to say any decisions on these policy rates, the rate on ES balances and the cash rate target, those are for the board. The board might see fit to make adjustments, particularly to that gap, which is what this question's referring to, which is currently 10 basis points. It would do that depending on the evolution of financial market conditions. But as I've outlined in my speech, the ES balances, the value of those are going to remain very high for an extended period. So I would not anticipate a need to revert back to the arrangements that were in place prior to the pandemic anytime soon. In terms of the TFF and the bond purchase program, and the question of whether or not they have implications for this, well, the TFF will roll off sooner, of course, but because both of them, ES balances are going to remain high, and particularly the bond purchase program for some time yet. In that environment, the cash rate will likely remain between the cash rate target and ES balance rate, which is what it's done for some time now, but certainly no more than the cash rate target if OMO provides a source of liquidity at the cash rate target or no higher. Thanks.
Thank you, Chris. The next question comes via an APMA member through the APMA Secretariat. The RBA has announced a decision will be made at the main meeting about reinvestment of bond proceeds. Will the pace of RBA balance sheet reduction around 2024 TFF maturities be a factor in that decision, or does the RBA view the runoff profiles for the TFF and bond purchase programs in isolation?
So the decision about reinvestment of bond maturing bonds, the key consideration there is the state of the economy and the outlook for inflation and unemployment. And we've argued that the TFF has been a helpful part of the policy package that's contributed to low funding costs for banks and been passed through to very low rates for households and business borrowers. And as the question suggests, maturities are going to start off for the TFF coming through next year and then more into 2024. For bonds, those maturities, there are modest ones in July, November, and then a larger one in April of next year. But all of that and the timing of that, that's all well known in the market. No obvious implications for the current state of the economy. So I think the timing of those maturities in the future, I don't think they have significant implications for the current outlook or the current course of the economy, other than the support they've already been providing that is factored into the current economic conditions and the current outlook. So there's a bit of time between now and May to see how those conditions evolve, how inflation and unemployment evolve, and that's what will determine the decision on reinvestment.
Thank you. This one also comes through the Secretariat. In fact, the rest all do, so I won't keep saying that. At the start of the pandemic, the RBA expanded the range of repo-eligible securities to include corporate paper with appropriate ratings. Will this be wound back, or is corporate paper now permanently repo-eligible?
Yeah, so just the background of this is we started to accept investment-grade corporate paper as collateral for the bank's repo operation, so that was an expansion of that program. We announced that back in May 2020, and the logic of that decision was going to help to assist with the smooth functioning of Australian capital markets. In that regard, I do think it appears to have had a small positive benefit, at least in terms of the liquidity of those securities at the margin. The bank manages this and the risks implied by taking this collateral, not only by ensuring that the paper is well rated, but also by applying appropriate haircuts to that paper. As I emphasised in the speech, the OMO framework, that does evolve over time in response to changing circumstances, but I don't think there's a need to wind back that change. I don't think that's imminent or pressing. So I would expect that we'll continue to accept those securities and provide that marginal extra support to markets.
Thank you. The next question is, will you consider changing your OMO design again in the future?
Well, as I've suggested in the speech, it's an evolving framework. Certainly nothing is set in stone. The key things we're focused on and what I want to emphasise is these sort of benefits. And now those are focused on providing short-term liquidity to banks and financial institutions that maybe don't have quite the same access to liquidity as some other institutions, but also, quite importantly, to provide a liquidity backstop in the event of a broad-based funding pressures, which can arise from time to time. But look, if conditions evolve and further changes are needed to make sure those benefits continue, then yes, we'll make these adjustments. But we don't make these changes more often than necessary.
Thank you. Just a reminder, if you want to ask any questions of Dr. Kent, please post all questions via the chat function, which can be found in the bottom right-hand corner of your screen. The next question is a question I guess a lot of people are asking. Why choose floating rate repos? Why not just stick with fixed rate repos?
Yeah. So the longer term plan, as I said, to move to floating rates, I think that the point of that is to ensure that the return on OMO repos is going to remain aligned with overnight market rates over the life of the repo, even in the face of the possibility in the future of policy rate changes. And that should work well regardless of the We want that to work well regardless of the repo term or the level of uncertainty over future policy moves. And I'm not talking just potential moves higher in the future, but also moves lower beyond that. And so this is different to using fixed rates, which may or may not reflect the overnight rates over the life of the repo. And using a floating rate based on the actual overnight interest rates, rather than just those which are projected, helps to avoid those sorts of problems.
Thank you. There's been a lot of volatility and illiquidity at times throughout the last 2 years due to the pandemic. What if going forward there are signs of funding pressures in markets?
Well, through our dealing room and the contacts we regularly have with market participants there. We closely monitor market conditions through that channel. We maintain a liaison program with market participants, and all of the AFMA member market committees are a key part of that, as well as just monitoring sort of market prices on a regular basis, on a high frequency basis. So, look, in the event of funding pressures, we would expect our dealing volumes to increase as OMO repos become more attractive to market participants. Because they can source funding at a lower cost or in larger quantities that might be available in times of stress from private markets. And that's a very good thing. That's the design of OMO. That's what it's there for. And that should also help to contain any emerging tightness in money markets before it becomes too acute. I think that was the experience immediately following the pandemic. And if conditions warrant it, look, the bank's prepared to change the parameters of its open market operations, such as the frequency of terms which we offer, sorry, the frequency of conducting the operations, as well as the tenor of the terms that are on offer. And that's always been the case and will continue to be so.
Tremendous, thank you. Well, it seems that, oh, wait a minute, sorry, is one last question coming through. Are you worried that using floating rate, oh, hang on, where'd it go? Just disappeared there from somewhere.
The one that's just come through on the chat. I can see it there if you want.
Oh, thank you, Chris. I want to
Did
read
you want me to read it out for you?
it.
Are you worried that using floating rate repo creates a circular logic for the cash rate target? Given in a post QE world, OMO is the main tool for ensuring the cash rate is at target. I think that's the gist of this question is there is potential circularity if we were to base OMO on a market assessment of what the cash rate might be. That's certainly what we're going to do in the interim. I don't think that will be problematic to the extent that those market expectations over a period of time are unbiased. There is some logic to the question, but I think that's why. If what we do is base OMO on a cash rate target, which is a policy decision the board makes, and it's an ex post rate, so you'll only find out the cost of this after the fact when the repo is rolling off, then you short circuit that problem entirely. So we'll be providing OMO always at this sort of average of the prevailing cash rate target over the term of the repo, and that should avoid that problem.
Thank you, Chris. I seem to have lost some functionality here. I can't see the
There's another question coming through, but I think it's about to disappear on me. Can you see that next question coming through?
Do you want me to? I'm not sure if okay to read out the name as well that comes with it, if you like.
I think you're probably better not at this point in time if you don't
know. Okay, I won't do that. But so the question is, may I please ask whether there will be a similar move to floating rates and or OIS-based rates on RBA AOFM securities lending? And will the change to floating OMO repo impact or negate overnight SF repos? There are no plans to sort of make that move. I'm trying to imagine why we might want to do that, but the reasoning escapes me for now. I don't see there'd be a need to do that. I mean, this, what we're doing in lending out from our existing pool of securities is very similar to the sorts of private transactions that occur in repo markets between private sector participants, and we're just drawing on the pool, large pool of securities we've accumulated as part of our bond purchase program and the support of the yield target. So I think we're just following conventional market practice there, and there's no reason to make a change in that direction.
Thank you, Chris. I don't think there's any more questions coming through that I can see at the moment. I'm not sure if you can see any more on your side of the, your side.
No, there's no more on my side of things.
Obviously, attendees must be very comfortable with what you've said so far, so we might just leave it at that. AFMA, once again, would like to thank Dr. Chris Kent for joining us today and outlining the new open market operations for the RBA, and we wish you all the best.
Yeah, thanks, Mark, and thank you, everyone, for attending today, and enjoy an early lunch break, I guess. So thank you all.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.